here I am. Shows like this really piss off governments. You know, I'm just too old, and I care too much about this not to do it. And that apparently is also the case for Graham. Graham Hancock is my guest. And like the late, great Terrence McKenna, Graham is laying it right on the line. If you'll stay right where you are, we'll be back with more. Graham, in recent years, I've thoroughly glommed on to the whole consciousness thing. I've been really boring in on it. There would be other shows you could listen to that would demonstrate that to you graphically. I've really been on to consciousness. Now, I agree with you on DMT. It's a shortcut, but in mass, it's not going to occur. We're not going to change a lot of minds with DMT. People are just going to realize it can be done. Some will do it, but most won't. So if we're going to get a big change, anything that's going to save our butts, it's going to have to come almost like a switch being thrown for human brains all around the world. Is there any way that you see that that might happen?
Yes. Well, first of all, let me just address the DMT issue a little further. Because one thing that we now know, which we didn't know 20 years ago, is that the human brain, and specifically the pineal gland inside the human brain, the so-called third eye, the pineal gland produces DMT, dimethyltryptamine. So all of us, every single person listening to this program, whether they like it or not, right now has an illegal drug inside their bodies, which is produced by their own brains, and we don't know why it's there. It's produced in such minute quantities that it doesn't normally give most of us visionary effects, but it can spontaneously overproduce at some time. Now, there's a scientist at the University of New Mexico, Dr. Rick Strassman, who was the first American scientist to be given permission for more than 20 years to work with hallucinogens and human volunteers in the 1990s. And Rick Strassman did an 8-year research program with a large number of volunteers, giving them small doses you only need a very small dose of DMT. And these individuals had extraordinary experiences of encounters with beings and entities, which in many cases, around about 80% of the cases, were identical in every respect to the experiences of encounters with beings and entities that UFO abductees report. Except we know that in the case of the volunteers in Rick Strassman's project, they were not being abducted physically by UFOs because they were lying right there on a hospital bed under the watchful eyes of Dr. Strassman himself. But their consciousness was going to some place where it was having these encounters and experiences. And after a number of years of consistently, again and again and again and again, getting the same reports from different volunteers of encounters with the same entities, the same kind of entities in the same kind of situation, Rick had to begin to ask himself, why is this happening? If these things are just hallucinations, which are supposedly just concocted and cooked up by the brain, then you'd expect everybody to have different experiences related to their own life experiences, their own past history. And what's stunning is that they all have the same experiences, and these experiences are extremely similar to the experiences of encounters with beings and entities reported by UFO abductees. So what Rick was suggesting, to cut a long story short, is that people who have the UFO abduction experience, in many cases, are people who spontaneously overproduce DMT, puts them into a visionary state, and allows them access to these other realms. And it's very important to be clear that what he is saying is not that the DMT causes or creates these experiences, simply that it allows these experiences in.
But his research could be used for either argument, and I bet it is being used for either argument.
Yes, it can. Well, it can be. I think his research is absolutely intriguing, particularly when you cross-correlate it, as I have done in Supernatural, with experiences from all over the world, particularly what shamans are doing and experiencing. And I myself went down to the Amazon to drink the hallucinogenic brew ayahuasca, which contains DMT, by the way, that has been drunk by shamans in the Amazon for tens of thousands of years. And the reason that shamans drink this brew is that they believe that it opens a secret doorway inside their minds that allows them to project their consciousness through into other realms where they meet intelligent entities that communicate with them and teach them. So what I'm saying is that these experiences, these transforming experiences, are in fact available to all of us. We have our own body chemistry has already provided us with the vehicle to do that, and it may be that something to do with the DMT that exists in all our bodies may indeed sweep over the world and allow a change of consciousness to take place. And again, it's very important to emphasize that these experiences, called hallucinations, called visions, we actually don't know what they are. One of the aspects of mind control in our society today has been that the governments have allowed so little work and so little serious research into the possibility that altered states of consciousness may be the route to proving the supernatural and the paranormal, far more effective than chintzy little instruments like ghost meters. What we need to do is to retune the receiver wavelength of our brains. Our brains are the most fantastic instrument we shall ever have. And right now, and this serves the interests of our governments, we're only using a tiny fraction of the potential of our brains.
Well, that's fascinating. Would you describe a simultaneous release of DMT in brains around the world as an evolutionary leap forward?
I would indeed. And I believe that this evolutionary leap forward occurred before. That's why I call my book Meetings with the Ancient Teachers of Mankind. There's a fascinating moment in the archaeological record just prior to about 40,000 years ago when it's as though a light is switched on in the human brain all over the world pretty much at once. And I suggest that it was was a change in consciousness that took place then, and that it may well have been mediated by brain chemistry in the form of DMT, that it may be an agent. And you see, we have to ask ourselves, why do our bodies make this substance? Science is not able to find any function for it. It's very interesting that this substance is produced by the pineal gland. If you go back into the evolutionary history of the pineal gland, and if you look at it in evolutionary older animals, such as lizards, for example, you'll find that their pineal gland is actually an eye. It has a lens. Now, in more evolved creatures like ourselves, the pineal gland has moved deeper into the brain. It ceased to be light sensitive. It no longer has a lens, but maybe it is still an organ of perception. And maybe the medium through which it perceives reality is dimethyltryptamine, is DMT, that's a kind of lens that allows us to access other realities. And it's astonishing how once you begin to look at things this way, you can realize that virtually every supernatural experience that has ever been charted, including the alien abduction experience, which I rank along that line, has to do with a change of consciousness. Now, this doesn't mean that there isn't a physical reality to these experiences. There certainly are physical, measurable consequences of the alien abduction experience and the sightings of UFOs, for example. Mm-hmm. I just think that we don't need to jump to the conclusion that these are spaceships from other planets in this physical universe. I think that's we may be dealing with entities that have developed a technology that can cross the barriers between dimensions. I think that would be much more likely to explain the physicality of these experiences, that they've found a way to flood into our universe, that there are beings, entities out there who are profoundly interested in the human race. Some of them positive, some of them negative, but it may be that there's some help waiting for us out there at the level of consciousness.
Graham, are you able to describe the experience you had in Brazil?
Yes, I've had multiple experiences now. I've drunk the shamanic brew ayahuasca 18 times, 11 times in the Amazon and 7 times in other locations around the world, including in Japan and here in Britain. And what's extraordinary about it is that it plunges you into a seamlessly convincing parallel world where you meet intelligent beings. And amongst the beings that I met in the Amazon were entities of the type that would be described as greys in the modern UFO literature. And this was really surprising to me, because prior to that, I had never been interested in UFOs or alien abductions. And I suddenly found myself confronted by a being of this sort in my visual field. I was sitting in a jungle hut, but my consciousness was interacting with this other entity. Very often, what you see in ayahuasca visions are serpents. Serpents appear again and again. This is astonishingly well documented. The professor of psychology at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Dr. Benny Shannon, is one of the world's leading experts on ayahuasca. He has actually drunk ayahuasca more than 300 times himself. And he has compared the experiences of hundreds and hundreds of people from all different parts of the world, from the Amazon, from the industrialized countries. And what he's found is that all of these people meet the same entities and receive teachings from them, which very frequently they say transform their lives. I can honestly say that my encounters with these entities in the ayahuasca experience has definitely transformed my life. It's caused me to think again about all sorts of knee-jerk issues that I never examined before in my life, about my own behavior, about the way I relate to others. I've had to reconsider everything about my life, and I've had to reconsider the nature of reality, that we cannot simply say that reality is this physical world that can be weighed and measured and counted. Maybe this physical world is just a tiny slice of an overall much larger reality, which is our birthright, but which our intense focus on day-to-day life is just preventing us from accessing. We can all get there, but we are so tuned in to what Rick Strassman calls channel normal that it's very difficult for us to get there, and that we may need help. But the potential is there within us. The potential is there to access other realms and beings. It's played a huge part in the story of human evolution, and I believe it can play a huge part in our evolution again. And right now, with the policies that our governments have, which restrict our consciousness in so many ways, legislate against what we as sovereign adults may experience, flood our brains with the pap of mindless reality television from morning to night, flooding our consciousness with that, all of this is preventing us from accessing these other realms. But the potential is there, and it can turn around very fast when it happens.
Well, what proves all this would be the similarities, Graham, and how deep really are the similarities of the experiences that people have had in Strassman's work, in any other reporting on the use of this stuff. How really similar are they?
Astonishingly similar and astonishingly deep, and we don't only need the relatively small amount of work that scientists have been allowed to do in order to understand this, because one of the things that I do in Supernatural is go back to the painted caves, the very beginning of human spirituality. The very first time that we can recognize ourselves as human in the archaeological record is the time that our ancestors start making paintings on the walls of caves more than 35,000 years ago. And what those paintings show are beings and entities of the type that shamans in the Amazon or in Central Africa experience today in altered states of consciousness. Very recognizable entities and beings. Very, very often, these supernatural beings are shown as part animal and part human in form. Right. There's actually a technical term for that. They're called therianthropes. And I may use it again in this discussion. And that's from the Greek therion, which means wild beast, and anthropos, which means man, a combination of wild beast and man. In other words, not the kind of being who you meet in everyday life. People in altered states of consciousness in the lab experiments at the University of New Mexico and deep in the Amazon jungle meet beings like this all the time. I've met them myself again and again, repeatedly, while drinking ayahuasca. And interestingly enough, people who have the UFO abduction experience very frequently meet hybrid beings of the same type, who are part animal, part human. Often they appear first in that form before shape-shifting into the more familiar form of greys. Sometimes they're part insect, part human, but there's a universal human experience going on here, and our science is making a terrible mistake by just dismissing it all as illusions and hallucinations. There's a reality to this, and the reality is confirmed by the absolute universality of this experience, not only between cultures today, but going back deep into prehistory, more than 30,000 years ago, we can see the earliest documentation of encounters of this sort. So we have a real problem to explain here. Normally, when everybody agrees that they're seeing a certain thing, we tend to say that that thing is real. But when it happens in the framework of the mind, and our scientists can't measure a physical object outside, they say, oh, it's just an illusion. And I wonder on what basis they do that. They have no evidence for that statement at all.
I absolutely agree with you. You would think that people's experience, Graham, would be, oh, I don't know. If somebody is a very strong religious person, you would think that their experience would be with Christ, for example, or with Buddha or whatever. But that's not what's happening. And if it's not what's happening, how can the scientists dismiss it?
Well, they dismiss it purely on the basis of prejudice and bias. And science forgets that there are unexamined metaphysical assumptions at the basis of Western science. And one of those unexamined metaphysical assumptions, not proven at all, is that there is nothing more to reality than the material world, that there is no spiritual dimension. Science just asserts that as though it's actually proved it, but science has never proved it at all. And in a way, science is engaged in a bogus war with organized religion, because organized religion is only one dimension of the spiritual experience. The spiritual experience for tens of thousands of years has not been channeled through organized religion. It's been the direct experiences of shamans working with altered states of consciousness. And again, we have so much propaganda, so much, pardon the word, so much bullshit generated to persuade us that we must not experience altered states of consciousness, that people are just afraid to have this experience that is their birthright.
All right. Well, all of this might be looked at by some as encouraging drug use.
Yes. And grave danger of that. And I realize that I'm playing into the hands of the propagandists here by presenting a positive picture and a positive image of dimethyltryptamine. There's a couple of things I need to say about this. First of all, ayahuasca, the sacred brew of the Amazon, which has been drunk in the Amazon for at least 10,000 years. Ayahuasca is completely legal throughout the Amazon region, and it is legal and it is protected under laws of religious freedom. More interestingly, ayahuasca is used in clinics, and more of them are opening all over the world to get people off hard drugs. People who are addicted to heroin and cocaine, after five sessions with ayahuasca, more than half of them abandon the addiction forever and never return to it. They don't have withdrawal symptoms. They go through an astonishing process of personal transformation where they realize they don't need that monkey on their back anymore.
But that's not true in Great Britain or in America, is it?
What, that such clinics exist?
Yes.
Well, there are kind of guerrilla clinics. One thing I've noticed is that ayahuasca is spreading around the world. I was able to have an ayahuasca session here in Britain just 2 weeks ago.
Really?
It's spreading at grassroots level. This is a true grassroots movement. It's people reaching out to discover their spiritual heritage. And the shamans in the Amazon feel that it's a very important part of their mission to help us in the industrialized countries reconnect with the world of spirit. And they believe that ayahuasca may be one of the most potent and effective ways to do this. And more shamans from the Amazon are finding ways to travel to the West with the help of friends in the West and to bring this sacred brew to us so that we may sit down in a ceremonial surrounding with the correct preparation of our minds and experience this extraordinary entry into another realm and cause us to question the whole nature and basis of what we think of as reality.
Well, Graham, the Chinese have a saying that the nail that sticks up gets hammered down, and you're a nail that's sticking up right now. Are you at all concerned speaking out this boldly as you are?
I am concerned, and when you know, but at the same time, I feel that there are truths here that need to be communicated, or at least there's a point of view here that needs to be communicated. We imagine that we live in a society that has freedom of speech, and it ought to be possible to talk freely about this. But actually, we don't have freedom of speech, and grave dangers do present those who talk freely about subjects that our governments don't like. Sadly,
we're right on the money. All right, we're at a break point. Hold on, Graham. Graham Hancock is my guest, and speaking freely, he certainly is. From the high desert, it's good to say that, in the great American Southwest, I'm Art Bell. Hope you're having a great night tonight. A new religion that'll bring you to your knees. In a lot of ways, that's what Graham is talking about right now. That's exactly what he's talking about, a new religion that'll bring you to your knees. Not in the strictest sense of our organized religions today at all, but that is what we're talking about. More in a moment. Graham, you know, we've been looking for other life out there, hard as we can, and hard as we've looked with SETI, no signals yet. We've not detected life, or at least complex life, anywhere else at all, ever, despite our best efforts. Now, could it be that there's two possibilities? One is life is rare. Life is only here. The other is life is not so rare. I rather take that road. I think that life probably springs up on likely planets here and there, but there's the possibility that life is cyclic and that it destroys itself on a regular basis. And we may be approaching that juncture when the switch gets thrown and we virtually disappear by our own hand. And I hate to be such a damn pessimist, but I think short of this great awakening that you have been describing, we're at about the end of a cycle.
Yes, I'm afraid we are at the end of the cycle, and anybody with a mind can see that we are facing doom, a self-inflicted doom, and that we are being maliciously and deliberately misled by the powers that be in our societies to ignore that. On the question of life, I agree with you, Art. I think the universe is probably filled with life. I think that's what it's for. But I think that it's also much more complex than we imagine, and that you know the issues that quantum physicists are now getting to grips with, the issues of multiple interpenetrating dimensions, which quantum physicists have already demonstrated that such things exist in indirect ways. They just don't know how to get into them. But we have evidence of tens of thousands of years of human experience of contact with intelligent entities that I would say appear to come to us from other dimensions rather than from this physical universe. So although I do think this universe is filled with life, and I do think we will eventually prove that. I mean, beings existing on the same physical plane as we do, I think there's far more powerful evidence for the existence of beings and intelligences on different planes, vibrating at a different frequency, if you like, than we are, perhaps interpenetrating in the same space that we occupy, but at the level of another dimension. I think there's just huge evidence for that. And as I say, I think it's been documented going right back to the painted caves in Upper Paleolithic Europe more than 35,000 years ago that we have these contact experiences with beings and entities, and that it's a folly of our science to be so rooted and grounded in the material realm that it's just unwilling to consider all of these possibilities.
Well, Graham, it could be both. In other words,
it definitely could be both. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, it could be both. These could be life forms on other planets. The kind of contact that we're talking about right now would be an instantaneous contact. In other words, faster than light. And scientists are moving in this direction right now.
Yeah.
It's just that they're trying to do it with hardware.
Yeah. Trying to do it with hardware, the wrong equipment. Yeah. This is why science is finds it so hard to get to grips with this, because they want to do it with hardware, and really it's a software issue. We already have the hardware. It's called our brains, and we need to slightly reprogram or retune our brains to gain access to these other realities, which are real. And which can be demonstrated to be real if we're willing to do the research. And we have the tools at our disposal. Shamans for tens of thousands of years have provided us with those tools. The most despised people on our planet, who our scientists look down on as primitive, superstitious savages, they are the ones who really have the secret of interdimensional contact and have used it for good purposes, for positive purposes, for healing. Shamanism is primarily about healing. Mental and physical healing, have used it for those purposes rather than for acquisitive, destructive greed, which is the ethic of our society today. So I think we need to sit down at the feet of the great shamans of the Amazon and of other regions such as Central Africa. We need to sit at their feet and listen to what they have to say, because their direct experiences of contacts with other realms and other realities have profound implications for what it is to be human. And actually, Art, I would say that it's experiences of that sort which lie at the roots of all the mainstream religions that we have in the world today. It's just unfortunate that after the original shamanistic experiences of contact with supernatural beings that created that founded these religions, that after that the money men and the bureaucrats stepped in, and increasingly our organized religions today are instruments of control rather than instruments of spiritual liberation. But if you go back to their roots and really look deep into how they began, you are going to find shamans having experiences in altered states of consciousness, contact with supernatural beings. Think of Moses in front of the burning bush. Think of Ezekiel and his experiences of a celestial journey.
Yes.
Think of Joseph Smith and the angel Moroni, who reveals to him texts written on golden plates. Think of the Prophet Muhammad sitting in his cave, cut off from society, isolated, shivering, a classic state to enter an altered state of consciousness, who encounters a supernatural being that he construes as the angel Gabriel, who gives him the full text of the Quran. Think of St. Paul on the Damascus Road, a blinding light completely changes his life, a vision, an experience that totally turns him around. These are true shamanistic experiences, and they were experiences of direct spiritual contact. Then, unfortunately, as human beings get into the picture and start wanting to control and bureaucratize everything, the religion, instead of, as I said, being an instrument of liberation, becomes an instrument of control. And pretty soon, these altered states of consciousness in which direct spiritual experiences are possible become outlawed and frowned upon by the religions themselves. So what's happening today, as shamanism is reintroducing itself into the urban environment, whether our governments like it or not, is that people are once again discovering their birthright, their right to have a direct spiritual experience which can change their lives forever.
Well, answer this for me, Graham. I agree with everything you've said. It explains so much that otherwise is inexplicable. Here's the deal. If you're a scientist today, Graham, and you want to look into the line that you've been so describing so well this night, you've got a family, you've got a career, you probably are associated with a university, and if you begin going down the roads that you've described this evening, you're probably going to lose your job, you're probably going to get your tenure yanked, even though you thought it was safe. In other words, career over.
Absolutely. Look at the case of, we talked of the late, great Terence McKenna. Let's talk for a moment about the late, great John Mack.
Yes.
Of Harvard University, professor of psychiatry at Harvard University, who began to realize that the astonishing universality of the UFO abduction experience must have a reality behind it.
Yes.
As a rational and reasonable man working directly with the evidence as a scientist, John came to know that there must be a reality behind this. And first, and he didn't insist on what kind of reality it was, and I do know in the last years of his life, John was very much moving in the direction of considering interdimensional contact as the basis for this reality.
I know.
You know, he was a brilliant, brilliant man, sadly killed in a car accident in London, unfortunately, in 2004. But what happened to John was just an absolutely clear example of what you've just been saying, that his colleagues at Harvard University turned on him like a pack of mad dogs because he was saying this extraordinary experience may be real. Harvard University made huge efforts, although he was tenured, to get him fired from his job, to have his right to work taken away from him. Now, he fought it back with a good lawyer. He did manage to keep his job, but for the rest of his days, he was isolated, shunned, not spoken to by the rest of his colleagues. So that, unfortunately, I'm afraid you're right, is what our society does to people who think outside the box. It wants to shut them down. And the grave danger here, and it is a very grave danger, is that by refusing to consider these extraordinary possibilities, we may be denying ourselves the next step forward in our own evolution. We may be locking ourselves into a disaster that we don't need to face.
Maybe there's no way out because
I have great faith in the power of human consciousness. I see everywhere around me. It's a small thing at the moment, but it's growing. I'm coming back to the sacred vine of the Amazon. By the way, ayahuasca means the vine of souls or the vine of the dead, because one of the things that it consistently and repeatedly does, and it has done so in my case, is that it allows you to contact and speak with deceased ancestors and sometimes to settle issues and problems that you may have and to understand things about them that you didn't understand. Ayahuasca, this vine from the Amazon, is spreading out across the world. It has spread into the United States. Just recently, the Supreme Court of the United States was forced to agree that members of the Unidad de Vegetal, which is one of the ayahuasca churches from Brazil, there are more than 100 members of the Unidad de Vegetal in New Mexico now. And they took their case to the Supreme Court, and they said that we have the right to drink ayahuasca because it is our religious sacrament. It is the vehicle by which we contact the spirit world. And the Supreme Court was forced to agree with them. And they have been given the right to drink ayahuasca, which otherwise is totally illegal in the United States and contains Schedule 1 banned substance, DMT. Nevertheless, because the Supreme Court could not deny that these people were practicing a religion, it had to allow them to continue with it. And this, to me, is the way that the armor of the system is going to be broken down, that we have a system that cannot deny, it just cannot, it is an outrage to deny individuals the right of religious freedom. And it happens that ayahuasca has been used in a religious context for at least 10,000 years. So our governments cannot turn around and say that it's not religion and it's just some drug. Actually, nobody who takes ayahuasca does so for fun. It's a very difficult experience. It's very hard work. You have to brace yourself for it, and it is a profoundly spiritual experience. So I do see a possibility here, coming out of the Amazon and coming out of other sacred plants. Of course, ayahuasca is not the only one. I believe in the case of our Stone Age ancestors, when they were turned around, when their lives were transformed 35 or 40,000 years ago, that it was probably the use of little mushrooms called psilocybin, which may first have been gathered as food items and then unleashed an extraordinary wave of consciousness in their minds that spread around the world. So there are many plants that have this potential. They've been used in a sacred context for thousands of years, and they are coming back. They are staging a revival, and this revival is happening fundamentally at the grassroots level, that adults, responsible adults, are making decisions about their own consciousness, whether their governments like it or not.
Let's take that as an example. Graham, let's take that as an example, and let me press it a little bit. All right, the Supreme Court agreed that a small, relatively small group in New Mexico may do this as a religious sacrament. Now, if that began to spread And I mean really spread. I bet I know exactly what would happen. The Supreme Court may have done that in this case, hoping that it would remain small and isolated. But if it began to spread, I'll bet you that Congress would, if they had to maintain control, change something in the Constitution and overrule the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, sadly, as we've seen, the U.S. Constitution, which is one of the greatest inventions ever of humanity, is being steadily eroded and eaten away by the United States government right now, often by stealth and often by threatening us with terrible fears and terrors. Our governments tell us, oh, we must take away this freedom from you so that we can protect you better. But again, what I sense here is a growing swell of outrage, of absolute outrage. Felt this very strongly when I was traveling in the United States in October, that more and more people are just utterly astounded and outraged by the astonishing behavior of their governments, the unacceptable behavior, the extension of control, the erosion of fundamental rights. And while many people are still blinkered to this, I do see a wave of consciousness already moving through society, which is rooted and grounded in a feeling of complete outrage that our governments would dare to do this. And ultimately, a government cannot control an awakened citizenry. And that is what is happening now. I hope that's what's happening.
I feel the absolute deep truth of what you've been saying. As I said, it explains so much that otherwise cannot be explained. We would normally, and I will, in the next hour, try and take some calls for you. But there's another subject that I see that you've got down here, and I really want to talk about that. I've been fascinated by what scientists have called junk DNA.
Oh, yes.
And I know that you've got something to say about that. You and I, we've been traveling some parallel roads here in our thinking.
Junk DNA is really the most extraordinary thing. I do go into this at some length in Supernatural. You see, the problem I'm dealing with in Supernatural is, why is it that people all over the world and for the last 35 or 40,000 years, deep into prehistory, keep on having the same distinct experiences which are supposedly not real? Mm-hmm. Could those experiences be real? Could it be that there is a secret doorway, as I put it earlier, inside our own minds through which we may project our consciousness through into other dimensions? That would explain these universal, supposedly non-real experiences, because all of us are really going to another place that is real, but that normally cannot be accessed. But another explanation for this is that there may be some kind of interactive teaching program written into our DNA, the DNA that we all share, written into our DNA, which can only be accessed in altered states of consciousness. This would also explain the universality of these experiences. And then the question becomes, who wrote that program into our DNA? How did it get there? And this is the great mystery. Is it advanced beings from another planet in this physical universe, or is it possible that our world, that the physical world, is in some way a creation of what we call the spirit world? Which again goes back to what all religions say, actually. All religions say that our world is the creation of a spirit being. Maybe that is so, in which case DNA would be a fundamental part of it. And junk DNA is extremely mysterious. We think we know everything about DNA. People have heard of the Human Genome Project, and we think that means our scientists now know everything about DNA. Nothing could be further from the truth. What we know about is around 3% of DNA. That's the DNA that's gathered together in our genes and that codes for the assembly of proteins that leads to the construction of our bodies and our organs. But the other 97% of DNA, our scientists, in their quote-unquote wisdom, call that junk DNA, as though billions of years of evolution would have preserved 97% of a substance which is useless just to keep 3% that is useful.
Translation, we don't understand it, so it's junk.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the very mysterious thing, which is it has become clear that junk DNA, as distinct from the DNA that is gathered together in our genes, junk DNA has a mathematical structure which is identical to the deep hidden structure that unites all human languages. And I do have a chapter on this in Supernatural because it is a most astonishing fact.
By the way, how long has Supernatural been out?
It was published in the U.S. in October this year. It just came out in hardback in the U.S.
Ah, okay. So only in hardback right now, available Amazon, that sort of thing?
Yes, available from Amazon. And I have lots of course information on my website, which is www.grahamhancock.com, about the book for people who look for more information on that. But yeah, it's been out since October. And I'm trying to get to grips with what I think is just the absolutely fundamental mystery of human consciousness. And I was so glad to hear you say that's a deep concern of yours and has been for a long time now. It is the greatest mystery of all. What is this thing we call consciousness? Science hasn't even scratched the surface.
No, I agree. I think ultimately consciousness will be proven to be a greater power than atomic energy, much, much greater. I did some experiments, Graham, that were just, they absolutely astounded me. Stay right where you are. We're at a break point. We will begin to take calls in the next hour for an amazing Graham Hancock. I'm Art Bell.